Hey, everybody, and welcome back to the Be Better podcast. We are coming to you this time from beautiful Chula Vista, California, in the Elite Athlete Training Center, which I believe was formerly the Olympic Training Center. And with me, I have two of my friends who I'm out down here coaching with, Ken Axford and Wes Johnson. Welcome, guys.
Thanks, Chris. Thank you. Appreciate having us.
How are you guys doing?
Doing good.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Enjoying the weather here?
Enjoying a little warm weather. Yeah, it's a good change for us in Utah and Colorado.
Yeah, you can't beat this.
We all come from cold weather backgrounds, and I'm wondering if there's like a, you know, did it just happen that we had it in a nice warm place like this, or was it just, you know, because we are podcasting from the deck, you know, kind of in the shade. If I'm looking outside here, the sun's out, little breeze, we're all in short sleeves. This is nice for us, isn't it?
It is extremely
super nice. Yeah.
So we are here this week. We're working with the U.S. Paratriathlon national team and the development squad. And we're running a camp. We're 3 days into it. I'm trying to remember 3 days into our camp. This is my first time being at down here and working here. But you guys have been working with Para for quite a long time. Can you give us a little bit of history about how you came into it and where you see yourself going with Para Tri as a coach and kind of as a leader?
Yeah. So. This is Wes Johnson, and I think I've been involved with paratriathlon since 2014, or it's either 2013, I think 2014, and I got started, I guess before then I was coaching more juniors and you know, getting into the ITU draft legal racing world, but had some experience with non-draft and age groupers, and I started coaching Chris Hammer, who was ranked back then, I think, fourth in the world, fourth or fifth, when it was still kind of in the early stages when they just announced that triathlon would be in the Paralympics. And so he came from a running background and ran in London in the Paralympics. And he wanted a new challenge, so he switched to triathlon, and I started working with him. So that's how I got my foot in the door with USA Paratriathlon, and they invited me to come to a camp and kept inviting me after that. So I just really learned a lot from other coaches and working with the athletes and being at these races and experiencing you know, all the different world we're in with paratriathlon, but on the same side, the high level that they all want to be, they have a standard that's, you know, pretty much along the same lines as elite athletes, and they want to be treated the same and not any different, and that's what I love about these athletes. They're here to really, you know, get the best, absolute best out of themselves, and they don't want to be treated any differently. So we give them that, and we work with them and work with limitations, but we, you know, really get the best out of them every day. And then after I got with Chris Hammer, I started working with Grace Norman, and then was a coach in Rio and had an absolutely amazing experience there and the progression up to that race and that event. And on that day, I experienced a little bit of some highs and lows with Grace getting gold and Chris Hammer getting fourth with, you know, he wanted the bronze and thought he was going to get it, and ended up being kind of a tough, tough swim for the guys' race, with really, really tough conditions, and him not coming from a swim background, it put him a little bit too far back, and he had the fastest bike run split of the day, but it put him a little too far back to catch third. And then Grace got gold the next day, so I saw, you know, both extremes and how they've come from it since then. It's been just an amazing experience to see both sides of it and see how Chris as well has turn it into a positive and is doing really well right now in this next quad, and And then just working with all these athletes at these camps, and working with these coaches, with Ken and Chris here, and all the other coaches I've worked with in the past at these camps and races, I just feel so lucky that I've been involved with this and I've learned what I have, and I still feel like I have so much to learn, and truly feel the more I get involved with these, the more I have to learn. And when I feel like I'm on top of my game, I'm humbled the next day or next minute and realize how much I still still have to learn and still have to go. So it's a fun world, and it's a different challenge. I love the challenge that that coaching triathlon brings, but also paratriathlon, and the way the different, you know, we got to kind of think out of the box sometimes and think a little bit differently, and I just love that challenge, and I'm just very honored to be a part of it all.
Well, I think it's you do a great job, and obviously you being one of the three coaches that were represented in Rio had to have been a huge part for you, and I think that's a big piece. I think just from that, people kind of hold you to maybe a little bit different standard. I know that, you know, that's kind of, maybe it's just being the naive young coach that I am, that I see that and I'm like wow, that's a huge accomplishment to get to that point. I think a tip of the hat from the organization to recognize your capabilities, your leadership, and so that's a big piece. Ken, you have a number of athletes that are here, mm-hmm. and but also that you work with Peak Multisport. Mm-hmm. How did you come to para? I mean, how you've got a similar journey, but
yeah. So I took on my first para athlete in 2016. So I feel like a kind of a newcomer into the para world. But what I'm finding is it's really, you know, it's not much different than coaching any other athlete. Every athlete, whether para or non-para, has their own challenges. And so when I first came in the sport, you know, it was very clear in my communication of, you know, I know physiology, I know the sport of triathlon, but I don't know you. So tell me what are your struggles, your limitations. And so with each athlete, you know, whether it be an amputation or some kind of internal dysfunction or limitation, you know, all athletes have that same kind of scenario, that same dynamic. We all have our limitations and our obstacles to overcome. So, you know, that's why I love, you know, my job as a coach is to just optimize an athlete's training, whether it's dealing with, you know, equipment or physiology or time or whatever. But working with in the para world has been great. There's kind of a different vibe in para triathlon, and every athlete, you know, especially at the national level, you know, for athletes who are focusing on world-class competition, they're professionals to a T. And so it's every nook and cranny. We're hunting for every little advantage we can find. And, yeah, so it's been a good learning experience for me over the past year and a half. And I'm currently working with three para athletes, all of which who are at least on a continental level, if not a world-class level of competition. And just gives me some new challenges, but lots of fun in the process to help them succeed.
So let me ask you guys, because I'm coming into para coaching with my first athlete, and you know, being my second camp, and I came in with, I would say, a little bit of apprehension as to my own capabilities. I've been coaching for quite a while, and just feeling like, can I do this? And I think that just in my time working with you, Wes, just even in Colorado, and even with our evaluations that we did last night, it seems that those apprehensions may have been more cerebral for me. That it is a lot, like what you say, Ken, that it is focusing on the individual, and just like anything else, you have to look at the individual, have to look at what they present you, and then work around that, and then create a I would say an answer or a go forward from what you see. For other people out there that are wanting to get into para coaching, because you know we're having the second certification coming up with USAT. That's a new piece, and hopefully we see some more coaches kind of getting into that and kind of maybe taking a broader jump into para, and you know, so it becomes a little bit more demystified. What would be some I would say coaching points for that you would give a newer coach coming in? What would be some advice that you would want to say to them as they're maybe approaching coming into para triathlon coaching?
I guess I'll jump in here, because immediately two things come to mind. First and foremost is don't be scared. They're athletes in the truest sense of the word. And again, so kind of to my previous point, the challenges may be slightly different, but they're still triathletes. They still have to swim, bike, and run. You know, most of their bodies typically work in a similar physiological fashion as other athletes. And the second part is just communicate on a two-way street. So being open, asking questions, you know, what struggles do you have? Have you thought about this? Have you thought about that? And coming into it with kind of a fresh mind and a fresh perspective may be something that those athletes are looking for of, you know, hey, did you think about adjusting the knee on your prosthetic, or how, you know, what kind of prosthetic are you using, or, you know, do you have, what other kind of things are going on? You know, because we're not just talking about amputations. You know, there's a variety of physiological impairments based on a scale of how they're classified. But just asking those questions and getting familiar with your athlete and having an athlete who's open to communicating with you about what they need. So it's really no different than any other, you know, athlete-coach relationship. Just creating that two-way communication, what's worked in the past, and what new ideas can you as a coach bring to the table.
That's great advice.
Yeah, I would say really it all comes down to mainly the fundamentals of coaching, and that's first and foremost the most important. And, you know, your ability to actually coach is the most important. But if you're getting into the sport of paratriathlon, I think it's really important that you do understand the basics with the classifications, what are the differences with transition,
yeah, you know, the rules, right?
The pre-transition, why is there a pre-transition, for who does that apply to, you know, the different, and understand how an athlete gets out of the water, how you can help an athlete out of the water, go and volunteer to race and be a handler, and, you know, just get a basic understanding at least of the sport and the differences. But really, yeah, mostly it comes down to the fundamentals of coaching and your ability to coach. And you will learn as you go with paratriathlon, but I would, you know, definitely learn those basics of the sport of paratriathlon and the differences.
Yeah, you guys mentioned being a handler. Have either one of you ever worked as a handler before you started taking on athletes?
Oh, good question. I have not. Yeah.
Okay.
I haven't in a race, but we've done a lot of practice. We've done some teaching sessions with people that are going to be handlers and just been involved in that process a little bit. But myself, no, I haven't, just because I've always been a coach at the races, and that's always been the priority. But
and if you have more than one athlete, it can be kind of a little bit difficult where you're a handler for one of your athletes, mm-hmm. and the other athlete's going, hey, what's up, Wes? Why are you doing here? Why aren't you helping me?
Exactly. The
handler thing, I've watched it happen, and it does seem to be a real integral part. Mm-hmm. In your experience, do athletes at a certain level, do they kind of isolate one specific handler that always goes with them, or do they end up getting different handlers at different races, or do they expect the race to offer them someone to be their handler?
Yeah, the only athletes that really bring someone with them specifically are the wheelchair athletes. The other athletes, if I remember, for the most part, they use the volunteers in the race.
I would think the visually impaired athletes would also have...
Well, the guides, yeah.
Their guides are specific.
Yeah, for guides, yeah. For guides, they stick to their guide for the most part. Sometimes they have an extra, you know, one guide, and then they have another one that they use as a backup.
But a standby.
A standby, yeah. But I guess I don't consider them handlers as much. I just consider them a guide. And then in the hand cycle with the athletes that are hand cycle in wheelchairs, they definitely tend to, you know, like having the same handler, you know, especially at big races, and someone they can really trust. But, you know, the reality is they travel all over the world, and, you know, not every athlete can pay for someone to come with them every single race. So they do, you know, rely on the volunteers of what they're given at a race sometimes. But I think when it comes to, you know, the highest level of the sport, they would like to, you know, have someone that they trust and know, you know, personally.
Yeah, I think they could. They definitely add to the performance if you have somebody that especially when you're looking at seconds being, you know, the differentiator between, you know, first and fifth, or, you know, getting paid and not being paid, or being medal or not being medal. That at some point that you'd think a handler would be almost an integral piece. That would be kind of like your right hand person.
Yeah.
At least I would think that. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. Maybe I'm not seeing that.
You mean a guide? No,
not so much as a guide. So I would say, like, if you think about just the proficiency of assisting, like, let's say a wheelchair athlete, the proficiency of assisting mm-hmm. them out of the water mm-hmm. to, you know, into pre-transition, yeah. through pre-transition into transition, you know, you can obviously kind of drag your feet a little bit, yeah, be a little bit more clumsy.
Right. How do they help? Do they hustle?
Like maybe it's somebody that's never done it before, and it's like, wow, like, sure. I'm fumbling the ball here a little bit, versus having somebody that's like, okay, I know exactly what's going on. I know what the weight balance is going to be like. I know how that smoothness goes. I could see where that would be a huge advantage, but financially, like you said, Wes, taking somebody with you all the time, that can be. Like, you're doubling the expense.
Right, yeah.
And it's expensive as it is, right? Yep. So I can see where that would be. That could definitely be a big pitfall here. Where do you guys see yourself going in the sport? I mean, is this in paratriathlon, do you have, I mean, Wes, you went to the Olympics already. So that, like is there something above and beyond that? I mean, is there like, what would the next level be for you?
I mean, yeah, the Paralympics in Rio was, you know, definitely the high point of where I can go. But really, I still feel like as a coach, I have so much more to learn and to grow that, you know, I don't feel like, you know, with, for example, Grace getting gold. Yes, that's a high point. But as a coach, I feel like I have a lot more to go myself of where I want to be, and so I look at it that way as well. And within paratriathlon, it's such a fulfilling and something that I just truly love that I don't really ever see myself not being involved with it. Or getting to a point where there's, you know, something beyond, which I think as a coach I can just continue to improve what I'm doing and my ability to help these athletes, whether they already had a gold medal, and continue to improve upon that, or progress athletes from where they currently are, you know, to their best peak performance that we can get them to.
So do you see, like, Ken, do you kind of see the growth as a coach? Do you see that path, that kind of following each athlete? So you kind of take one athlete, you move them up the chain, and then at some point in time they retire, and then you start again? Or is it because it's not like we make it to the pros, you know, like if you think of us as like a hockey coach, you know, okay, well, we're now a pro hockey coach and we've made it to the bigs. But it seems like for in our sport, we take an athlete and we kind of have this progression with each one of them. So it's each athlete kind of creates a different pathway that we have. And so I didn't mean to like say that you're like, Wes, you might as well just get out of the game because done, bro.
Go ahead, quit. You've been in Olympics.
Exactly. Why don't you make some room for everybody else here? Yeah, you're done, dude. It's like retire at 37. But but it does seem like that progression, that path is kind of. I don't, for me, that's the journey I enjoy, mm-hmm. you know, watching somebody develop and working with them kind of hand in hand and side by side and seeing them grow and kind of flower and blossom and do things that they maybe that were just dreams for them in the beginning.
Yeah.
And then seeing them.
And I think that's ultimately what drives, you know, any coach who coaches, you know, we're all in this profession, because we enjoy it. And seeing that athlete progression, and it's, of course, you know, are we counting medals and do we want the ultimate prize? You know, our athletes want to do well, sure, but you know, at the end of the day, you know, you have to take joy in you know the athlete who finishes that triathlon for the first time. You know, are those athletes you're coaching, or you know, is it an athlete who's already won a gold medal, but you know, there's more in the tank, and the competition is getting deeper and steeper, and it will continue as because it's an Olympic sport now, so. You know, as more federations jump on board and help funding with other athletes. And so, you know, the competition is going to continue to grow. So even if you've already won a gold medal, you don't sit on your laurels. You know, it's maximizing every athlete's progression, whether they're already considered at the top, but is that really the top? Do they have more to go?
Yeah.
Yeah. And so to your point, taking, you know, whether you're working with 3, 5, 10, 20 athletes, what's every athlete has their own progression. That's the beauty of our sport is it's, you know, there's always more to do.
And it's growing too. You know, I read that the medal allotment mm-hmm. in Tokyo
yep.
is increased, which is nice. I think that's a nice tip of the hat to show that, you know, that the sport's planted, it's mm-hmm. there and it's being accepted. And it's fun to watch. I mean, I can't say that you can't not watch it and it's racing. It's just like racing. It can be just, I mean, even when I know, what the outcome's going to be. Cause I was like the other day, I was just watching the highlight clips from Rio. It's like, you know, I knew Alyssa was going to win, you know, but I'm still watching, like, oh, she's going to do
still
it.
Brings out yeah. excitement.
Like you
sure.
still get that excitement. Yeah. Like it's, oh, could it change?
Yeah, yeah.
Could it change?
Every time
yeah.
I know.
Yeah. But it is a lot of fun and it just seems like it's a growth that it's fun to be at the kind of the ground level of, mm-hmm. you know, I think about triathlon and, you know, we were talking this morning that this is I think today is the 40th anniversary of the first Ironman
wow.
you know, 40 years ago, you know, who would have thought that it would yeah. you know, grow and be such a, you know, conglomerate that it is now. But I wonder if like in 20 years, if people look back and go, wow, you know, remember when like there was just, you know, the Sparrow was so small,
yeah.
you know, and then yeah. just like, it was like just this and this. And I think that's, you know, for me, that's kind of exciting to think yeah. about yeah. where it's going to go and, right. and like, what are the next people going to be and what are the advancements going to be? And, yeah. you know, where's the technology going to come and how's that going to change?
Yeah. It's encouraging as a 40-year-old sport. I mean, in the world of sports, that's a really young sport.
Oh yeah.
And so the, you know, the growth that we're seeing just in participation and athlete abilities and coach availability, coach knowledge. Just so many things that are exciting about the growth of the sport.
How much do you guys think the military activity that the country's taken over, I would say, the past 10, 15 years, and, you know, we've had a lot of people coming out of, you know, conflicts and military activities that have been hurt, and then organizations like Dare to Try and you know, some of the Wounded Warrior organizations and Challenge Athlete trying to re-engage people back kind of into, I don't want to say into society, but just, you know, kind of getting people motivated to be back in the world. I speak to this as a friend of mine lost a leg and had a fusion of his ankle. He was a very athletic outdoorsman, and it was he had a heart injury and basically collapsed at the end of a marathon. And he had a hard time kind of trying to find like where he was going to be back in kind of, I won't say life, because he was a very active person on the front side. And, you know, it was like trying to revisualize where that ends up on the back side. And I'm wondering, do you think that any of that, like where we've had kind of a big influx of people coming back into society out of conflict, if that has played any part in the growth of our sport?
Yeah, I mean, it definitely has. I think that's a big portion of our sport is you know, veterans and athletes who have been through some very traumatic experiences, and I think that it's honestly and it's a pretty cool experience that we see that transformation that they make, you know, mentally as well as physically, to be the top of their game again, or even for the first time in their life, where, you know, where they start focusing again on their abilities instead of their disabilities and what they're able to do instead of what they're not able to do. And I think it's just pretty incredible to see that transformation where, you know, there are other athletes that we have that were born that way. And, you know, seeing, we just have so much to learn from both. And, you know, those athletes that are born that way have never been treated any differently. And then the athletes that, you know, had these experiences in war or in some other way, they've had to completely change their whole mindset and everything they thought about life and what life meant. And that transformation, I think, is part of what makes this sport so amazing and so incredible to see the progression of each athlete, and it's so different for each athlete, and I think it makes our jobs even more rewarding because we see these journeys almost, you know, from sometimes at the beginning or, you know, wherever they're at, whenever we start with them, we see them go through so much in this journey, and it's just really a cool experience to be a part of that.
Would you say the same, Ken?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's, you know, there's multiple stories documented out there. And of course my experience is limited just based on the number of people that I deal with in the para sport. But, so many documented stories out there, whether it's an accident or war or disease or, something that's happened later in life, or to Wes's point, somebody who was born with it. If you weren't born that way, your perspective changes on, it's just different. It's a different perspective. And, to understand that, I love what Wes said, is focus on what you can do, not what you can't do. Focus on your possibilities, not your disabilities. And to have that ability, knowing you can go to the Olympics and you can perform at the highest level of our sport and do well. And it's back to my original point is, you know, these athletes are elite athletes. They're professionals in the truest sense of the word. You know, their lives revolve around their training. And that's what it takes to perform at the highest level. So it's no different than any other athlete.
Hey, that's absolutely true. And you know, just looking around here and some of the services that we have, it's like there's nothing that our athletes are not doing or that are doing that are any different than, you know, any other Olympic athlete.
Yep.
And that's fun to be involved with. I think that's exciting, I think, all the way around. What are you guys looking forward to this year? In the spring, it's early. Both of you guys were monitoring the race in Barbados this morning, and you know there was a lot of chaos that happened with that, with the lead runners going off course, and I know you guys are like completely tied into that. But what are some things that you guys are looking forward to, you know, in 2018, either for you personally or, you know, athletically, or just, you know, in the sport itself?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of things to look forward to from my perspective. And I don't know to go and, you know, I have a lot of things on my personal side and family side that I'm looking forward to. We just had a new baby we have two kids. And so there's that side that's just super exciting and a lot of fun. But I have to juggle this, you know, these awesome experiences that I have too, but that I'm away from family, which makes things hard. And, there's a lot of exciting things coming up and within the profession. I've got a junior that, you know, is really striving to get to Youth Olympics, and it's a year for that in the fall. And, you know, it's in the possibility. It's possible she can make it, but it won't be easy at all. You know, I think the chances of making it are less likely, but it's there, and she's giving it her all, and it's really cool to see her determination and what she's doing to get there. And then I have some elites I work with that it's super exciting to be involved with on that side. And yeah, just had a race in Barbados this morning. And then I have some long course elites as well. And there, one is training in Australia right now. She's roommates with Sarah Crowley, who was third in Kona this year.
Yeah.
So she has that, you know, to look at that standard every single day and the way she lives. I definitely have lots of different hats that I'm wearing right now, but it keeps me excited. It keeps me on my toes. And then I have an awesome group of, you know, of coaches back home, and we have a training facility in Salt Lake City, and all those coaches coach a really good group of age groupers, and everybody just feeds off each other, you know, the para and the juniors and the elites and the age groupers. It's been a cool environment and culture that I'm really trying to build upon and create that environment that leads to success. And yeah, it's just a lot of exciting things going for sure. And the sport is headed in the right direction. USA Triathlon is doing some cool stuff and some, you know, new things to have that initiative to get more people into the sport, and partnering with Ironman, doing stuff like that. It's been some cool things happening lately, and I think the sport is heading back on the right direction. I think there's been some decline here and there in the sport, but I think we have a new CEO with USA Triathlon's doing some awesome things, and yeah, really, really excited to be in the sport right now. And like Ken was saying, it is kind of a new sport. It's, did you say it's like 40 years?
Estimating.
Well, the anniversary of
Ironman's 40 years.
Our sport but in still, general, it started in the 80s. It's a young sport.
So it's just exciting because there's just so many, you know, opportunities that you kind of have to choose which route you want to go, because there's you can definitely spread yourself thin. And I'm just honored and excited to be involved with it all.
Cool.
Yeah, for me, when you asked the question, the media thought was Tokyo preparation. And so, you know, listeners may be saying, well, isn't that 3 years away still? Yeah, but if you think about it, so 2019, you know, that's where you're starting to earn Olympic points and qualification and qualifying races. And so 2018 is get all your ducks in a row.
Yeah.
You know, and with different athletes. So I'm from Colorado Springs. We live at altitude. How do athletes travel to low altitude? What's, you know, do they need to get there really early, get there really late? You know, starting to build those world ranking points, so that they get the race starts that they need to get the Olympic points they need, and just setting that precedent. Also getting some course previews. So some, you know, there's some races this year. You know, World Champs next year. You know, are we gonna are we gonna race on those courses and get a look at what World Champs will be like? And so it's pretty neat to be an exciting part of that, and to be thinking, you know, kind of in that quad mindset.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, it's exciting. You know, Wes, you mentioned, you know, kind of some family things, and, you know, we're all married with kids, and, you know, the one thing I think about that the commonality is that we travel a lot. I mean, we're on the road, and, you know, I think just in today, I've watched each and every one of us FaceTime with our family back home, you know, and I wonder about, like, the coaches, like, 10 years ago, 15 years ago that didn't get it, you know, you had to go to, like, a payphone or something, and you didn't get a chance to see your kids, you know, and that's... Yeah. That you know, I couldn't think of any other bigger support group that we have personally than our families at home.
Absolutely.
You know, without their consent, because let's be honest, we got to get consent from home, right?
Of course we do.
Otherwise, we'd never be able to come here. Yeah. If my wife was out snowshoeing this morning and she sees me, you know, with palm trees in the background, she's like, "Grr."
Yeah.
But you know, just a tip of the hat, I would say to our families and how. You know, we have to keep that as a something that's in the forefront, because I think it's very easy for coaches, especially like single coaches or young coaches, newly married coaches, to kind of get lost in their practice or in the program and have their relationship or their family be on the wayside.
Yeah.
And it's encouraging from my standpoint, to see you guys doing kind of some of the same things that I do to try to keep the home fires burning.
Yeah, God bless our families, right? I mean, it's like what, you know, my wife and kids right now, they're in Indiana, you know, dropping, basically visiting with grandparents, and grandparents are going to watch the kids for a while mom goes back home, and then we're off to the next races. And I know Wes is traveling down to Florida as well. And without those support systems, it wouldn't be possible. So our coaches, you know, we need our support system so that our athletes can have their support systems.
Absolutely.
That's how it works.
It's kind of this little bit of a house of cards that everybody doesn't fall apart, because it can easily if you don't pay attention to it.
Yeah, I've learned that this last year, I have to, you know, if we don't take care of ourselves, we can't take care of other people.
Yeah.
If we take care of our families and ourselves. And last year I had like a traumatic bike crash experience, and I learned, you know, through a bad concussion that, you know, if I got to take care of myself and I relied more on my wife and kids than I ever have. And I just so grateful for them. And it made me realize how much I need them, and how much I rely on them.
Love you, sweetheart.
I'm getting teary over here.
Well, I don't want you guys to be crying or anything like that. So, you guys, I can't thank you enough for all the time. And you know what? We're just early into our camp here with a week. So I thank you for sitting down and just chatting with me and sharing some of your thoughts. And I look forward to, you know, my journey here, working with you guys and learning from you guys, and just being a part of this great organization. So
yeah, Chris, it's great working with you, and thanks for the opportunity to chat.
Thanks, guys.
Yeah, thanks for doing this.
All right, everybody. Well, we thank you for spending another half hour with us here, and we look forward to having you back. So until then, we look forward to you being better in the meantime. See you, bye. I'm sure you had a life before this truth.